Hello, and thank you for listening to Renewables, a podcast by BioStar, which aims to explore the current and future energy landscape in America.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Season 3 of Renewables. We are so excited to kick off this season with Jesse Henry, co-founder and CEO of Heartland Industries, has an amazing story to tell about industrial hemp, a topic that we have not covered that much really at all on this show. So really excited to have you. Jesse, thank you so much for making the time.
Thanks for having me, David. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. So I'm fascinated by Heartland and what you all are up to, engineering hemp fiber as additives for plastic. But I really want our listeners and viewers to hear it from you, not me. So tell us what Heartland does, kind of give us your elevator pitch.
Yeah. So Heartland is a material science company that engineers hemp fiber as additives for plastic. So we replace and augment traditional materials like fiberglass, talc, and calcium carbonate. We primarily work with brands and their suppliers to help them embed carbon negative additives without any retooling costs. So we work with the big brands at the top of the supply chain that you see in the automotive space or consumer packaged goods. We work with their supply base to really help them reduce the cost, weight, and carbon footprint of the raw materials they use every day.
Awesome. Yeah, it's so interesting. And you have some interesting folks that you're working with, which we'll get into here in a minute. But I Googled you, okay, and I loved what I found. I found an awesome TED Talk that you gave at FSU. I don't know how many of my guests have given TED Talks before, but I don't think that many. So I was impressed and really enjoyed watching that and kind of listening to your presentation there. I highly recommend our listeners and viewers Google Jesse and listen to his TED Talk from FSU. It was fantastic. But tell us kind of how this all started, some background about yourself, and how you ultimately came to co-found this amazing company.
Yeah, so I was a kid with a stutter who went to a state school. You know, I didn't go to some top-tier university. No offense, FSU, I love you. And my career really took a pivot after the TED Talk. I left college. I traveled Europe for a few months. And then when I came back, I got really grounded and, hey, what do I want to do? So I left Florida State. I became a speaker for Tony Robbins. So I traveled the country doing corporate training events, really teaching people how to uncover their limiting beliefs and patterns. And it's not to speak poorly of that experience or Tony or the self-development industry as a whole. I love it and I appreciate it. It just wasn't for me. And so my value shifted from success to happiness. And as my value shifted, I realized that I was no longer in the right seat. My next career, I was in investment banking as chief of staff at Intersection Capital. Again, value shifted. I'm not passionate about what I'm doing. No one woke up the next day and said, oh, God needs more investment bankers. And so I really wanted to dial in what I needed to focus on in life. And for some reason, sustainability kept ringing true to me and felt like something that I needed to focus on in order to make sure that my grandchildren and my grandchildren's grandchildren had a planet that they could thrive on. So I left in beginning of 2019 to go figure out what that meant for me. And after a lot of pivots and series of both fortunate and unfortunate events, I ended up with Heartland. And today we focus on plastic additives, but as we expand, we're finding uses in rubber, foam, asphalt, cement, and concrete, and paper, and all these other raw material supply chains where our additives can both increase the performance and reduce the carbon footprint.
Awesome. I appreciate you giving that background. And I know it can be a little scary and daunting making career changes, but good for you for kind of sticking to what you were feeling in your core and for finding something that sort of fueled that passion. So we talk about farming a lot on the podcast. We actually produce an organic fertilizer at BioStar Renewables that we sell to organic farmers across the country. We make that fertilizer off the back end of anaerobic digesters. But so we love talking about the farm. And I think from your all standpoint, it really starts at the farm, right? So tell us, what kind of farmers are good fits for growing industrial hemp? I know a lot of farmers are starting to really look at growing products like this to diversify. and create additional revenue streams for your farm, for their farm, excuse me. So what kind of farms are good fits? Who can participate in this?
Absolutely. So we typically focus on farmers who have non-irrigated land and have commodity crops. So in America, the main commodity crops are corn, wheat, and soy. In Asia, that might be rice. In South America, that might be sugarcane. But by and large, we're looking for the farmers who have been farming the same crops for decades or generations, and they're looking for something new, something different that they can add into their crop rotation to change their soil health and increase their revenue per acre.
Yeah, and you it starts at the farm, and obviously you have to grow this material, but thought it was interesting on your website, and as I talked to you and got to know you a little bit and your company, just talking through the supply chain of industrial hemp, and of course it starts with the farmer and growing the hemp, but you all sort of take, you know, I think you work directly with farmers, is that right? But then you also sort of work throughout the process of the supply chain. So talk a little bit about that and sort of how Heartland fits itself in and works through the various steps of the supply chain to deliver value.
Absolutely. So I'll speak about that in the context of the plastic industry, because that's what we'll focus on today. So Heartland today, we both farm in-house and we buy off of the spot market. So we'll buy round bales of hemp fiber that are grown across North America. We then take that into our facility and process that into the form of powders and pellets. Those powders and pellets are used as plastic additives and then sent to plastic compounders. So a plastic compounder really just takes the plastic pellets and mixes in additives. That might be a fiberglass or a talc, it might be a colorant, it might be a UV stabilizer or an impact modifier. And then that plastic compounder will send out that product in the form of sheets, tubes, and pellets. They send that product to what's called plastic converters. This might be an injection molder or a thermoformer or a compression molder. And that that converter then takes that raw material and converts it into some type of component part. Once it's a component part, it then gets shipped to the brand. The brand's typically assembling the product and marketing the product. So we have to work throughout the supply chain as a supply chain partner. We've really positioned ourselves as a sustainability partner. We want to really help the brand reduce the CO2 intensity of their product. And today we're doing that through carbon negative additives. But over the next couple of years, you'll see different materials and technologies that Heartland produces that are really meant to help service the manufacturing, the chemical, and the agriculture industries.
Really interesting. And I guess talk a little bit about how you have to sort of go to the brand and work backwards to get sort of buy-in at each of these stages, right? Because I thought that was really interesting as we kind of prep for the episode.
Yeah. So it's fascinating. When we started with a bioplastic. We then pivoted into plastic additives to better align with the pre-existing relationships and supply chain. So it was almost common sense. Just go directly to the plastic compounder, sell them hemp. The problem is that the plastic compounder has engineered a resin that hits the mechanical properties required by the brand at the lowest possible cost. And so they really don't have much incentive to change the formulation of the plastic compound that they're already selling. And so what needed to happen is we needed to go all the way up to the brand level and create the demand pull through to give the plastic compounder a reason to change. Now, in the automotive industry, that might be something as simple as lightweighting the plastic. But in all these other manufacturing sectors, there are sustainability mandates that are driving material changes. And so when you align to the brands that have these sustainability mandates and show them how your material can help them reduce the carbon footprint of their raw material supply chain, it creates that demand pull through for the plastic compounder to at least consider new materials. And that's really the starting point. Once they're able to consider it, then we go through the POC process where they're testing the new materials, they're characterizing it for different performance characteristics. And then from there, we can determine how this can potentially fit into their supply chain long term.
Awesome. I think there's, you and I talked about this, there's sort of an evolution happening. Obviously, you know, the bigger push, more companies are adopting ESG goals. You know, there's obviously sort of a push for sustainability happening in our culture here in this country and across the world. But there's also sort of an evolution from green energy to green materials, and that's obviously where you fit in. But talk about why this is so important, and why we have to think much further than just how do we create sustainable power, but how do we make every single thing right on our desk more sustainable. Talk about why this is so important.
Absolutely. So if you think about the raw materials that we rely on every day, plastic, rubber, foam, asphalt, cement, concrete, paper, all these materials have a really high carbon footprint. So every 1 pound of product typically requires somewhere between 2 pounds of CO2 and 20 pounds of CO2 to produce. And so if the materials industry is a $5.5 trillion industry, we're moving trillions of pounds of materials. I mean, these are commodity materials with high carbon footprints. So if we're going to continue to be reliant on these materials for the foreseeable future, that's decades or generations, we really have to think about how do we reduce the negative impact that we have and these materials have on the planet. And so if we kind of go back to the history over the past 20 years of what sustainability's meant, it's really been in the scope of green energy, right? You have solar and wind power, you have the investment tax credits that were created by the Obama admin. It was really, you know, the late 2000s and early 2010s where a lot of these initiatives were given some horsepower. And that was great. It really incentivized the investment into these clean energies. But now that these clean energies have been commoditized, we have to look at what's the next frontier of sustainability. Now that we have solar and wind and hydroelectric and geothermal and we have incentive structures for these things, how are we going to incentivize the use of green materials? And so there's been a couple of drivers for that. The Paris Climate Accord was a big driver. The UN Sustainable Development Goals were a big driver. And I think the SEC climate-related disclosures that came out last year are really going to require these large companies to disclose their carbon footprint data. And that's going to start to create these changes. Long-term, I'd love to create an incentive structure for companies to procure sustainable raw materials. I think that'll be an endeavor that takes a couple of parties to help out. But it's really our intention to commoditize these high-performance carbon-negative materials, because once they're commoditized, then everything we see around us today, all these end products, can be made from goods that actually reduce the carbon footprint of our society.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. And we have a solar development business, and we talk to people all the time about, yes, we can help you transition to on-site renewables or to create clean power. And a lot of folks are doing so because they have ESG goals, but also because, their electricity supplied from the utility is getting more and more expensive every year. And that's been happening across the country and across the globe for some time now. But I always tell people, don't think that just because renewable energy is becoming more mainstream that your costs are going to get less. You have to keep in mind that we still are using as much and more power year over year as a society than we ever have. And so at the end of the day, we can change some of the supply, but the demand still continues to grow. And I think what you all are doing really ultimately helps, potentially someday start to really reduce that demand. And that becomes a totally different conversation. So love what you all are up to, and think it's so, so important as kind of this next phase. Give us some examples just so our listeners and viewers can kind of relate here. What are some end products, I guess, that have your material in them? What do I use every day, or what's in my car that has your materials in them?
Absolutely. So today in automobiles, we're really focused on two main things. One would be non-structural, non-load-bearing, interior heavy plastic parts. And we're working with OEMs and their suppliers to help replace the current plastic formulations with a hemp-filled plastic formulation. Other areas where we have a lot of IP built up is around industrial packaging. Think crates, totes, and pallets that are used throughout the supply chain. Today, wood pallets reign supreme, but those wood pallets are very expensive to fix. They break a lot. There's some health complications if you are fixing them with all the nails involved, and plastic pallets are a little more durable and last a little bit longer. And so we're really focused on reducing the cost, weight, and carbon footprint of those materials, specifically in the automotive supply chain. We're also working deeply in the building materials business. Think PVC, flooring, siding, roofing, fencing, things like that. Yeah. Piping, yeah. Valves. There's so many products that we use every day that we don't really see. We don't think about what they're made of. We don't think about the formulation of the plastic or what type of plastic is used. We're not really the ones driving the innovation. It's really our customers that are driving it. So we get customers that reach out on the website. They're trying to figure out what sustainable materials they can use to create a new value proposition for their product and within their industries. And we're really just there to support them. So our innovation efforts are really that of our customers, and our ability to market Heartland's materials and Heartland's message is really what's driving inbound leads to the website, which is further driving that sustainable material innovation.
Excellent. Tell me, what are you most excited about in your business right now, or as you look into the next 5 years, what gets you most excited?
Yeah, I think we're finally at this inflection point. You got consumers and investors and employees, and they're all demanding the same thing. They all want more sustainable solutions to the everyday problems that they have and the products that they use. So we're really sitting at the beginning of the sustainable materials revolution. I mean, this is the gold rush of 1848. This is Standard Oil in 1870. This is U.S. Steel in 1901. The problem is that when you're U.S. Steel in 1901, no one uses steel. No one knows how to use steel. No one's familiar with steel as a product. They don't know why it's beneficial. And so since we're so early in this revolution, Heartland's really doing the heavy lifting on the education and really teaching people why and how this material can make a positive impact on their business. So I think in decades from now, we'll really look back at the 2020s as a time when sustainable materials became commoditized. And once these materials become mainstream, it's really the ability to unlock everyday products that now become carbon neutral or carbon negative. And this is really what allows our planet to survive long term. I mean, it's so obvious that we're headed in an unsustainable direction. So I've been very blessed to meet other leaders in the biomaterials business and the sustainability movement. I think this is a noble cause worth fighting for. Whether you're Democrat or Republican doesn't matter. We should all want our grandchildren to have a planet to live on. And so we're really helping push the envelope for manufacturers and chemical companies. We're very aware that a lot of our customers are some of the biggest polluters on the planet. And that's been a very interesting journey for Heartland, right? We have to realize that the people who have caused the biggest problems on this planet are actually best equipped to help solve them. And so we have great leaders at some of these companies who are committed to sustainable changes. They're committed to investing in those changes. And it's really about guiding them along in that process so that we can help work alongside them as we build the sustainable future.
Is there a sacrifice that has to be made to go and use your products versus the old way in quality or price? Is there a sacrifice that you have to make this switch?
The scope of plastic additives, the one sacrifice that you'd have to make moving from a hemp-based plastic additive, moving to a hemp-based plastic additive from like talc or fiberglass, would be impact properties. If you can imagine, a mineral like talc is very hard, and a natural fiber like hemp is pretty soft. And so today we outperform these materials in all other categories besides impact strength. We have been able to engineer against that by adding certain additives to the plastic to increase the impact properties. And so it's a bit of a chemistry game. But that's the one property today where we don't fully supersede the performance. Now, in other raw material supply chains like rubber, foam, asphalt, concrete, cement, paper, those are different stories. They might not require impact properties like plastic does. Specifically in the automotive sector, as you can understand, impact properties are fairly important. And so we've had to engineer against the problems that natural fibers have.
That's fascinating. So what you're saying is all the times that my German Shepherd has chewed through some piece of plastic in my car, he might have had a little bit of an easier time if it was hemp infused, but it would still have cost the same for the manufacturer and economically been the same. He just might have had a little easier time biting through my center console.
And it's funny because we don't even realize how much engineering goes into a dog toy like that. right? We just buy it at the store, and it's we say it's overpriced because it's $5 or $10, and they produced it for a penny. But there's a lot of additives that go into that dog bone to make sure it's safe for the dog, to make sure it has the ductility, to make sure it's the surface treatment is right so that the dog doesn't absorb any of the microplastics. And I don't know anything about dog toys, right? But it's easy to see how even a simple product like that actually requires a lot more engineering and chemistry than would meet the common eye.
Sure. And I love, I was playing around on your website. You have a plastic calculator on there that I thought was pretty cool. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so we made this today. It's only on the web version of the website. It's not on mobile. And this is a calculator to help determine the difference in cost, weight, and carbon footprint by using a hemp-based plastic additive with a traditional additive like fiberglass, talc, or calcium carbonate. So this is a very easy way for us to show customers the impacts of switching the additive inside their plastic as opposed to the resin itself. And for us, it was kind of a step one. We do have an advanced calculator on the back end that helps us calculate multiple additives inside the plastic, which admittedly was a bit of Irish algebra when we first started. But these are the tools that we use to really help our brand partners and their supply chain better understand before we even go down the path of testing the hemp additives, what the differences would be in the cost, weight, and carbon footprint to the raw materials if we do successfully succeed in the proof of concept process.
Yeah, really slick tool. I enjoyed playing around with that, although I probably understood less than half of what all the different things I was reading. I thought it was very interesting and worked very well. So if we have an OEM who's listening and they want to find out more, how do they follow you along with you online? Or if they're just a sustainability geek like I am and they want to keep track of you and the progress your company's making, are you a Twitter guy? Are you on LinkedIn? How do they follow along with you and Heartland online?
Yeah, so you could definitely follow along on LinkedIn. It's just Heartland Industries. My personal LinkedIn is Jesse Henry. You could go to our website, www.heartland.io, as in input output. You could also send an email to hello@heartland.io and someone from our team will get back to you. I think, you know, the journey, David, for me has been a lot deeper than just carbon negative materials. Over the past couple of years, I've surrounded myself with really amazing advisors in automotive and plastics and supply chain and sustainability who have really challenged my assumptions and challenged my thinking. And the one thing the one piece of advice I'd give for anyone out there listening to this, if you've gotten this far in this podcast interview, there's obviously something that's piquing your interest about, you know, what David's working on or what I'm working on. And the journey for me really took a turn when I started to look at sustainability outside the scope of carbon footprint. How am I showing up in my relationships? How am I communicating? Are my beliefs sustainable? Are the patterns in my life sustainable? Is what I'm eating sustainable? Is the chemicals that I'm using in my toothpaste or my deodorant or, you know, the conditioner that I use, are those sustainable? And I found that a lot of times the answer was no. The chemicals I was using weren't sustainable. The food I was eating was not sustainable. The way I was communicating was not sustainable. And this journey for me took a very metaphysical turn when one of my advisors said, hey, Jesse, the sustainability journey is about more than carbon footprint. You need to start looking at this a little more holistically and understand how you're showing up in this world. And so for anyone who's gotten this far in this podcast episode, I would definitely encourage you to look at the things in your life and ask yourself if it's sustainable, if what you're doing is sustainable, the thought processes, the way you're showing up, the way you relate to people and connect to people. And I think as you start to dive into how that can positively impact your world by changing and understanding how your actions are affecting others in the scope of sustainability, you'll really be able to show up as the best version of you. And you know, for businesses, sustainability can be a synonym for efficiency. But on the personal journey, we have to look at how we're showing up in the world and really understand, are we showing up as the wounded inner child version of ourselves that's just recreating patterns from our past? Or are we showing up having integrated these different pieces of us, really understand that the way we think and the way we relate to people and the way we communicate if they're grounded in sustainability, is really us showing up as the best version of ourselves and us best equipped to show up for our relationships, our businesses, and everything else that we do in our day-to-day lives. So beyond going to the Heartland website and browsing around and playing with a plastic calculator, I really encourage everyone that's listening today to really dive into the journey of sustainability, not just in the physical world, but in the metaphysical world. Really understand how showing up more sustainably can positively impact your life every day.
I love it. I could not have said it any better. Jesse, it's really been a pleasure to get to know you, to get to learn about your company. I will definitely be following along and might even ask you to come back for a repeat show next season as you all continue to make progress. I really look forward to following along. So big thank you to you for taking some time out of your busy schedule to come out on the show. Really excited about this episode. And like I said, it's been a pleasure getting to know you. Look forward to following along into the future.
Thanks so much, David. I appreciate you, man.
Excellent. Well, thank you also to our listeners and viewers. We couldn't make this happen without you. We're so appreciative of your support. We will drop the website and the Twitter handles and all that relevant data in the show notes so that you can find Jesse online if that's interesting. And just a big, big thank you to our listeners and viewers. The podcast reach is at an all-time high. We're super excited to be back for season 3 and have a lot of great episodes coming your way. So this has been another episode of Renewables. I'm your host, David Smart, and we'll look forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks. Thank you.
Hello, and thank you for listening to Renewables, a podcast by BioStar, which aims to explore the current and future energy landscape in America.